Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and our special guest today is Carrie Pierce. Carrie is the production manager for Provident Bank Mortgage. It's in the Inland Empire that he works. They do about $20 million a month. He's been with them for 4.5 years and has been in the industry for 28 years and has been with us before. So, Carrie, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I guess the good news is you're still willing to be in the business.
Yeah, our business is all about change, and it just keeps changing every year.
I would imagine, let's say, if you went into a coma in 2006 and you woke up in January of 2014, you would barely be able to recognize the industry.
Exactly.
You got in the business 28 years ago, so about mid-'80s.
Mid-'85, yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to think. We were about ready to have a California boom for the next 4 or 5 years. And I really think that's a pertinent time frame to think about how lending morphed during those years. So I'm going to take you back there for just a second.
Sure.
85 to 90, prices were going up in California, you know, gradually and then aggressively. Was it part of the mood of lenders to become more aggressive during price increases? Is that what happens?
I think so, just because we needed to find more avenues to finance people, and, you know, the standard products, the 30-year fix, just wasn't doing it, and the ARMs started to become really popular, the 5-year, the 7-year, and I personally did several of those loans, you know, back in the early 90s.
And when you go through a 90 to 96, where we had our first pullback, you know, at the time it seemed pretty drastic, but looking back at the last one, that was pretty mild. Did lending programs kind of rein in their aggressiveness, and did you lose programs during those stretches, that stretch, 90 to 96?
You know, the ARMs were still there. We just didn't do very many of them back then that I remember. You know, when the market really started going crazy was around 98, for me anyway, when the subprime loans became really popular, the 80-20s, the zero down. That's when lending got really creative, especially when they started doing 80-20 on stated income.
Right, and 98 to, say, 2005 or 6, I mean, the prices just gradually kept on going up and up.
Yeah.
With more and more aggression. So I guess what happened is, you know, you could make a loan that would have seemed unsafe in 98 but got bailed out by prices that turned into, you know, double-digit gains year over year over year. It's hard to make a mistake in lending when that's going on.
Right. We had people that from 98 to 02, 03, you know, doing the 80-20 loan, and 2, maybe 3 years max later, they were doing an 80% refi and wiping out that second.
Right. And they were wiping out the second because of the price had gone up so much.
Appreciation, right.
Well, and I guess when you're a lender going, you know, if you're legitimately looking at your track record, you'd go, okay, well, we're not getting damaged by that product, so let's go do some more.
Right.
So unless you really have a pretty good gauge of, you know, how things are going to end and, you know, get out of harm's way, it would really have been hard to avoid 2007, because that was a pretty abrupt ending.
Oh, 07 was brutal. I was with Home 123 back then, who was owned by New Century, and New Century was primarily an A-minus subprime player, and 90% of their production was subprime, and retail was only 10% of that. They took $8 billion to Wall Street, and Wall Street said, nope, we're not buying it. And that company was done overnight.
Literally.
Yeah.
The day that decision was made, that was the end of that.
Yeah. Yeah. We had 1 week to pack up our stuff, get our loans, and, you know, find a home for them. So it was rough.
Well, you know, now that we're into 2014, Dodd-Frank is, at least I think it's fully implemented, and maybe you'll tell me it's not, and there's more to come. And there's just a lot of concern. I just spoke over the last week at a number of places, and there's some real concern that, okay, now the damage is going to start. We're going to start seeing, you know, how restrictive it is. And I guess that's my first question. What's the mood of the people at your company as far as what they're looking forward to in 2014?
We already have seen some tightening a little bit, you know, the last 6 months of the year, where we were trying to keep people at max debt ratio around 45%, even though you'd get an automated approval higher. The company still wanted us to try to hold you back to the 45 in light of the QM that just got rolled out this year, the 10th, I believe. The QM rules have cut it down to 43%. But in that, they have a caveat that says if you have an agency loan, FHA, VA, or Fannie Freddie, and you have an automated approval that's higher than 43, you can still do that loan.
Okay. Now, we've said a mouthful right there. Let's don't assume everybody knows what we just said. A qualified mortgage, is that also now the same as a qualified residential mortgage?
Right.
Okay. And what is the criteria for that? You just talked about a back-end ratio. So
there's several things that go into it. There's no more interest-only products. On ARMs, you have to qualify at the fully indexed rate. You can't qualify at the start rate. So there's a lot of, you know, oversight that goes into that. But the max debt ratio now that they want is 43%.
Except for you just said that if you had an automated approval. So what would
correct?
What would the automated approval reach to if?
Well, here's the thing. Within the last 6 months, Fannie Mae and Freddie have tightened their automated engines, and we have not been getting approvals over 45 on conventional products over the last 6 months.
Okay.
So you have to be at 45 or less to get an automated approval. We've seen some FHA stuff go in a little higher. I've got one right now that's at about a 47.5, and we still have an automated approval on it. So,
you know, for somebody that's making $100,000 a year as a couple, their back end, I'm just trying to do the math in my head. This is on their gross income?
Gross income, yeah. So at $8,300 a month, 43%, you'd be at just under $3,600 a month, and then you got to back out their bills, and then that's what their max house payment's going to come out to.
Okay. So how much in other than house payment in dollars are we talking? In other words, you have X amount of dollars made up of a house payment, and to get just to that 43%, what if somebody's making 100 grand, how much extra is that per month of miscellaneous?
Most people have debt around 10% of their income,
you know,
car payments, student loans, that kind of thing. Some are higher, some are less, but I would say that's probably a rough gauge. So if you back off 800 off of that 36, you're down to around 2,800 as what they could qualify for in house payment.
Okay. Any concerns about the new oversight as far as, is that being done under a different government agency? It's required you have a new license. So is that kind of being played out right now to where you're feeling the weight of another onlooker?
Well, the Dodd-Frank, I think, started it all with NMLS, where every loan officer has to be licensed. We have a small, well, so far, even up until today, a window to where we haven't had to go through the actual licensing through NMLS. We only had to get registered because we were owned by a bank. But now they're saying that the QM kicking in is there's one other piece of the puzzle, and now banks are not going to be excluded anymore. So all of our loan officers are going to have to do the NMLS training.
Okay, and that basically is it. There's a system now in place that's able to track a particular mortgage broker's track record. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Another part of the QM that kicked in on the 10th is we now have to print the loan officer's name on the deed of trust and the note and their NMLS license number.
Wow.
So that's one more way that they can track down what loan officer did that loan. You know, if there's any kind of issues with fraud, obviously they've got a way they can go after them.
Has this added cost to doing a loan?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously there's some programming issues up front, so initially a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be significant over time.
Okay. How about as far as the new regulations making the amount you're able to make per loan? Has that changed?
So far, no. I mean, we've seen, you know, the part of the QM, they do have a couple new tests that are coming into play, high cost loans to where the maximum a lender can make is 3%, but there are certain things that get excluded from that, like legitimate discount points where a client wants to buy down the rate. They don't put the discount points into that equation.
Okay.
So, and most lenders today don't charge a 1% origination fee like they used to the last 20 plus years. So most of them are now doing just the standard, you know, processing, underwriting, that kind of thing. And it's fairly easy to fall under that 3% with today's environment.
Okay. The way it's set up right now, all Fannie Mae automated approvals, Freddie Mac, and FHA are qualified residential mortgages in?
They still fall under the umbrella, but they have the exclusion that as long as you have an automated approval over 43, you can still fund that loan.
Okay, well, what's significant about falling under that umbrella? Is that in the ease of getting rid of the loan? Or, you know, having...
Well, as a lender, we want to make sure that it fits into the qualified mortgage criteria so that we have the guarantee on the back end. Otherwise, if there's one tiny little thing wrong with that loan, they can throw it back in our lap and they won't guarantee it.
When you say, okay, and again, I'm actually, there's some of this I don't completely understand. When you would lose their guarantee, does that mean that you've bought the loan back and it's now portfolio? Or
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And so the ramifications of that are, let's say you just did a $417,000 loan, and the way you described it, it doesn't have to be a lot for them to kick it back.
No. You could find one fault with the DU where you missed one debt or, you know, the income was off by $50, minor things like that, and they can kick the loan back now.
Okay. And once they kick it back, and you're talking about after it's already funded, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, so they kick it back. Your company has to write the 417 check, basically.
Yeah, put it on the portfolio.
Okay, and what's the secondary market for removing that loan from your portfolio at that point?
If we try to sell that loan after the fact, we take about a 15% discount.
So somebody,
we're going to lose about 15% by selling that as a B paper loan.
Because the yield has to be more than the face...
Right.
Value of the note?
Right.
So that you take a 60 grand hit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huge hit.
Wow. So is the choice usually we'll just keep it?
Usually, yes. And then they'll try to season it and hopefully try to sell it in a year or two down the road and get a higher premium.
I see. Interesting.
But the goal for Provident has been not to grow the portfolio.
Of course.
they've been wanting to keep it down only because it forces them to have more capital reserves, and it's tougher for them to meet that criteria than it is to just sell the loans.
Right. So in the business that you're in, you never want to have that take up space in your portfolio. That's for sure.
Right.
Are there any loans that you specifically let's explain the entity itself. You know, Provident Bank Mortgage is almost confusing to even me. So Provident Bank is a bank that does loans.
Been around since the 50s.
Right.
And, the mortgage company itself, I think, was late 70s that they started doing mortgage loans.
Okay. So Provident Bank has depositors. Is there a loan that is typical for... you know, a bank to do? Would that be a construction loan that gets paid off within a year? Are there loans that lend itself to, let's say, the family of mortgages that don't have to be QRM or QM?
Seconds, you know, fall into that category. The construction loans, commercial financing doesn't fall into it. So those are more appealing, you know, especially now with the new guidelines. But we still do occasionally throw a loan on the books, and the ones that they target are the short-term, 10-year fixed or less.
Okay.
But not too many clients can afford to qualify for that, so there's not very many of those going down.
And what about the over the 417 loan amount? Who's buying those loans? Is that still a Fannie and Freddie product up to a certain point?
Yeah, there's high balance that's still in effect, and that got extended throughout this year. So, like, for example, Los Angeles, they go up to 625.5 on a conforming loan, and they call it conforming high balance, and there are pricing adjustments for that loan. Typically, it's about a point more in cost than a loan that's 417 or less.
So the interest rate could be the same, but it's going to cost you another point on the principal balance, basically.
Right.
Okay. Now... you said that got extended. That's a little scary statement to me. Does that leave that to be open for renewal again next year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we were fearful that they would cut it off this year and cut everybody back to 417, but so far they've extended it for one more year for the higher-cost counties. But prior to, I think it was somewhere around 07 or 08, you know, when they were trying to, you know, inject some stimulus to get the housing going again, is when they upped the limits and they increased them for the high-cost areas. But prior to that, most areas were all on the same playing field. You know, L.A., 417, San Diego, all the same as, you know, everybody was on the same ball field.
Right, and when you have a median price at 600, 417 isn't too much of the market anymore.
Right.
Okay, what, in your opinion, happens if that goes back to 417 a year from now?
It's going to force more jumbo players to enter the market. We've already seen them come back. For, you know, when we initially had the crash, 07, 08, and even early 09, very few jumbo loans were going down because they were very hesitant to come back into the market. But over the last 2 years, more and more of them have come back, and we've seen some that have actually priced their product as aggressive as Fannie Mae on a 30-year fixed loan, higher than 417, though.
Right. Why would they want that paper? What are they doing with
it? The caveat to that is they want 20% down.
Okay.
So they're not going to do anything less than 20% down. Like Fannie Freddie will go 5% down. They want the more skin in the game, basically.
Right. Is that a portfolio loan to them?
We still sell the loans, but
no, I know you do. But
they put it on their books, and the big players like Chase and Wells are some of the buyers for those jumbo loans.
Okay, even at today's rates.
Yeah,
interesting. Huh. The jumbo loan product, if it's 20% down, does it also require a certain type of backlog of money? Reserves.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. At a minimum, most of the jumbo investors want to see 6 months reserves. Some of them go as high as 12.
Okay. But that market is, so that would just take over the space between whatever it is now, 600 to infinity to 417 in an infinity, but you still think there would be a loan?
Well, yeah, it's just that people are going to have more money down, so that is going to exclude a lot of people.
Okay. Now,
there's people in the market today, first-time buyers, that, you know, in Orange and L.A. can go out there and put 3.5% down and go all the way to 6.25% on an FHA loan.
Right.
So, you know, that's going to eliminate all of those buyers, and then even some on the conventional side that were able to do 10% down with those high balance loan limits.
Now, you just said that Fannie and Freddie have a 5% down product?
Up to 417. When you get over 417, you fall into the high balance, and then it's minimum 10% down.
Okay. So, excluding the down payment difference of 3.5 or 5, is there much difference in the qualifying of a Fannie Mae 5% down or an FHA 3.5% down?
Pretty much the same today.
Okay. And there's a PMI connected to both of those?
Correct. Now, the advantage of the conventional is it's got a lower PMI factor than FHA. FHA is almost pricing themselves out of the market and on purpose. Their monthly mortgage insurance now, the factor is 1.35 for somebody putting minimum down. And even if you put 10% down, it's still 1.3. So on a conventional 95% loan, if you've got a really good FICO score, it's going to be somewhere around 0.5 or 0.6.
So FHA that's why their loan volume is declining, is they're pricing the cost of insurance high. Now, it used to have a time that it could disappear if values went up and it was no longer within the 80%. Is that true? Yeah,
the standard time frame in the old days, it would fall off between 10 and 11 years automatically. But today, I think it went into effect June of last year, that the MI stays on for the life of the loan now. It won't fall off.
What if they decided to refi and it was under 80%? Then it wouldn't.
That's the only way they can get rid of it, is they are forced to refi into a conventional loan.
Okay. And while I'm thinking of it, a 5-1 arm, an FHA arm, is that when you say they don't qualify you on anything but the full, you know, the full rate? Is there, and when you get an FHA adjustable loan, if it's over 5 years long, that first adjustment, is that considered the payment they qualify you on?
Typically on a 5-1, conforming anyway, on a 5-1, they go the higher of the fully indexed rate, which is your index plus your margin, or start rate plus 2, which is the cap, the 2% annual cap. And so it's usually start rate plus 2 is what you're going to qualify people at.
Okay, so it's never the start rate.
Right. Now, okay. On FHA, they've had an exclusion to that to where they allow people to qualify at the first year rate on a 5-1. But conventionally, the only way that they've done it in the past is you had to go to a 7-year to be able to qualify at the start rate. But the QM rules are kicking all that out to where even on the 7 years now, they want them to qualify at an index rate.
Okay. The ability to repay rules, how has that affected the loan business that you're familiar with?
We've been doing full doc loans, obviously, forever. But, since the crisis, all the stated income loans went out the window. So in 07, those were the first loans to die.
Okay.
The stated income and then the A-minus and the subprime, all that stuff went away. So we've been qualifying everybody full doc ever since, and ability to repay, we're full doc. So there's nothing hidden,
Right. I guess, I would say at least once a month we get this phone call at the hard money loan company, okay? It's an owner-occupant, and it's a grandma, and she has a $300,000 house, and she wants to borrow $30,000. So, 10% loan-to-value. We can't do the loan. We won't do the loan because we don't deal with owner-occupants. But let's say she doesn't have income. Is there a loan for her out there?
No, I don't have one, no.
Yeah, see, that's what's interesting is that ability to repay is you can't make a loan, and maybe it's a good thing. Would someone like that qualify for a reverse mortgage?
Possibly.
Okay. Because there's nothing to pay on that, unless I really don't know, no expert on that, but there's no monthly payment attached to that. Is that true?
Right. I mean, you actually get an income from a reverse
mortgage,
so.
Yeah. Okay. The way the rules are now, mortgage brokers and Provident Bank Mortgage. Are you guys mortgage bankers, mortgage brokers, and explain the difference, okay?
We're a banker, so that means we're direct. We have our own warehouse lines. We fund our own loans. We're not relying on a broker source where we have to send them the package and then they fund the loan. And that's the difference. A broker, we actually do wholesale loans, so we are funding loans for brokers.
Right.
We have a whole different division that does that. But we've seen the broker community deteriorate rapidly over the last 5 years. And we've been able to recruit a lot of those originators into, Provident as direct lenders now.
So the makeup of the industry basically changed to where there's a lot less brokers and a lot more people working under mortgage bankers.
Correct.
Okay. And when you're a mortgage broker, I guess you could say, okay, well, I have all these programs available to me. Whereas when you're working for Provident Bank Mortgage, when they decide, okay, we're not going to pay attention to the automated approval at 47, we're going to stick at 43, in a way that it kind of limits what you're going to get qualified depending on the policy of that one lender. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So mortgage bankers, do they still deal with multiple people? And the programs, though, probably have to be almost remarkably similar now in line with the QM.
Yeah, I mean, we're all pretty much on the same playing field. It used to be, one lender might have an advantage because they might have a portfolio product, a special arm or something that has really low caps. But I think those days are mostly gone.
Okay, well, I think that's what's interesting is going forward, and we'll pick this up in the next segment, is, what percentage of loans going forward are going to be outside of QRM. I think we're going to have products that start coming up from the private, non Fannie, Freddie, and FHA that are going to start becoming, having impact in the marketplace. I don't know the time frame, but it seems like that's going to be inevitable and necessary.
I think so, and especially if Fannie and Freddie lower their loan limits, it's going to force that to happen.
Yeah, I have about 15 seconds, so I'll just make a comment. I was pretty surprised at the aggressiveness of the lowering of FHA limits. We'll pick up when we go to the next segment on that, but that was okay. Quite a change in Riverside.
Yeah, big change.
All right, Kerry, thanks for joining us, and we'll pick it up in the next show.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.